Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
We are about an hour and 7 minutes into Friday. And there you go, Rebecca. I'm Mike Ferguson in for Ryan Recker. Okay, what's on your mind? I'm going to be here for another hour or so. So let's kind of have a free-for-all here. I've actually been asking people to call in with your ghost stories because it's less than a week until Halloween. I used to work at a nonprofit organization here in the St. Louis area, and man, I had some weird stuff happen too. So you give me a couple ghost stories, I'll give you one of mine. I told one just a little bit ago, but let's go ahead and go back to the phone lines. It's 800-925-1120, and Stephanie's been holding the longest. Stephanie, thanks for your patience. You're on KMOX.
Hi, good evening. How are you?
I am so far so good. All right, you got one that's going to scare me?
I don't know. It's kind of weird.
Okay.
Strange. So about 20 years ago, my father passed away. And we had been estranged, and I kept having the same dream every night, like, you know, 3-4 to 5 times a week. It was the same dream over and over again. It kind of startled me. I'd wake up startled and kind of in a cold sweat and everything. And this went on for probably a good 3 or 4 months. And it was, you know, I woke up the same time every time with this dream. And my kids were little, so one afternoon, my husband had taken the kids out, and I was sitting there reading a book, and when my father passed away, his house had a very distinct scent to it. It smelled, you know, kind of like that medicated nursing home type.
Sure, yeah.
Scent, you know, that, you know, it's very distinct. So I was, you know, in my living room reading a book, and all of a sudden, that odor, that scent was present with me. And it lingered for probably, you know, 2-3 minutes. And I mean, I even like kind of said dad under my breath just to see if anything else would happen. And after that scent was with me for that 2 or 3 minutes, I never had that dream again.
Wow, that's interesting.
Huh. Yeah, it was just really strange.
Now, Stephanie, really strange. Are you a believer in ghosts and like people are still around?
Absolutely.
You are. Okay.
100%. All right. 100%. Yeah, there's too many odd stories that there's something. And I firmly believe that I firmly believe there's the good and the bad on the afterlife, but I firmly believe there's others among us that we don't see.
All right. Hey, Stephanie, thanks so much for the call. Have a good good evening, good weekend as we're heading into it. A text message just came in and said, Ryan had someone at the KMOX studio this year and discovered spirits are in that building. And actually, between the commercial breaks, I was getting filled in and told about that story as well. All right, let's go back to phone lines here. Stephanie was in Illinois, and Mike is in Missouri. Now, Mike, I got to warn you, I got just a few minutes here before I have to get to another pause. So it says here that you got a story about angels. So kind of go right to the crux of that. What's the story?
Okay. Now, a lot of people don't believe in angels. I do. So it happened to me one time, unaware. You don't see them in farm, but sometimes they can't come in any farm. So one time, my electric bill was off, and I was so mad. I say, leave it to God. I just had it. I speak to my guy. Said, now, he chose those things. He said, now, you get down on the floor, because I paid for electric bill. Stretch your hands out. So I did it. It sounded crazy. And then I got up. I felt better, apologized, went to the store. It used to be Shopping Save. It's Snooks now. I went there and said to this guy, I had a little money for like potted meat and was happy. And I ran into this right guy real quick. What are you here? How are you? So I'm just here. So just here. So real quick, and real nice to him and everything. And then all of a sudden he said, press on. And then later I talked to him and I said, hey, my thing was going through. And I said something to him like, I thought the right to make a man say, be a good bitch. Leave me alone. And my friend was saying, white angels or black angels. And I said, well, this was a black angel. Because and then all of a sudden, I didn't know this. I said, which one? He said, I listened to him and I went home. I found out he gave me $30 in my pocket. I ran back to give it to him. He was gone. And it was deals at the time. I said, what happened to him? They said, that was an angel. He disappeared. I never knew where he went since.
Well, and you got $30 out of it. I appreciate the call, Mike. I'm absolutely open to there is something out there. You know, Stephanie said she absolutely believes in ghosts and in the people, the souls of us here, not to put too many words in her mouth. I can't go that far. But here is one of the other things that happened to me, and this is here in St. Louis just a couple years ago, is that this is the only experience I had of the four that actually jolted me. So, again, I'm staying late at work. I should have gotten that message and not stayed late at work all the time. But I heard, you know, a door kind of opening and closing, but we had some windows open. I'm like, okay, now the winds are blowing things, whatever it is. And so I walked in to close one of the doors. I could see which one it was. And I had to walk by an elevator, and which obviously was not original to the building. And so as I'm walking about, and I'm about to leave anyway, just as I got in front of that elevator, something, it sounded like somebody hit it with a sledgehammer. I mean, shook the thing and just, I mean, I about jumped out of my shoes, man. It was something. Now, I don't know, maybe elevators reset and there's a pop or something like that, but it was that split second when I was right in front of it. And I thought that I was actually going to have a coronary right there, because the noise was so stinking loud right at that moment. And none of these things scared me, but that one jolted me enough to the point where I'm like, okay, wiping my hands of the work tonight. I am going home. 800-925-1120 or 314-436-7900. What's your experience? What happened with you? Or is there just something else? It can be in the news. It can be more serious. It can be whatever you want. We're heading into the weekend. I don't want it weighing you down, so get it off your chest and give me a call. I'm Mike Ferguson, in for Ryan Recker here on Overnight America on KMOX.
Happy Halloween from Overnight America.
Yeah, it's 1:18 on your Friday morning. I'm Mike Ferguson, in for Ryan. I just, you know, I know we talk about news and politics and everything, and I just don't want to go all political for the rest of the program. So there's a chance we can get Stephen Moore from Freedom Works. We could get him on the program here in just a little bit, so we may do that. I'm Mike Ferguson, by the way. The number here, 800-925-1120 or 314-436-7900. And we've been having some folks, if you're just joining us, you're just tuning in, who's given us some ghost stories or given us some weird experiences. Of course, we had Mike just call, and he was talking about angels. But we had some others talking about what they experienced. I even had a couple, even though I'm not a believer in ghosts per se, as to the way we understand them. But that's the one thing. I'm not a big Halloween guy, but I love like the Discovery Channel and Travel Channel and all those when they just go on those marathons of the ghost hunting shows. But it's funny because there's one of those, I think it's called Ghost Adventures, I think it's called. Actually, a friend of mine was one of the original producers of that. And they go in to do these ghost hunts, and it's like all the others, except whenever something goes bump in the night, they freak out and start screaming, and oh my goodness, oh my, and I'm thinking, wait a minute. If you're a deer hunter and you go into the woods, you don't freak out like, oh my goodness, that's a deer, that's a deer. If you're going to look for a ghost and something happens, shouldn't you go, yep, yeah, it's working. We're doing what we're supposed to do. I'm fish. If you're fishing, you're like, oh my goodness, there's a fish. That's just one of the things that cracks me up. By the way, that producer who was one of the original executive producers, name is Wayne Allen Root. Who now does one of the weeknight shows over at Newsmax TV. So Wayne's no shortage of energy whatsoever. Wayne's always got something interesting to say. But I'd love to hear your story as well. But there is a lot of news stuff that's happening. I hosted a couple of days ago, and we had a lot of calls on this case in Texas, which was the James Younger. If you've heard about this case, this is the 7-year-old boy who is caught in kind of a not really a custody fight, but a parenting fight between his parents, who are divorced now, and the mother. Her name is Ann Georgulis, I think is how you would say it. She says, "My son is transgender, and I want to transition him, and I want to prepare for him to do the hormones and the chemicals and all that kind of stuff." And the dad says, "No, he's a 7-year-old boy. Just let him be a 7-year-old boy." And they went to court over whether or not the mother would be allowed to do this. And she wanted custody, and she wanted the court to order the dad to call the boy by the name that she had given him. That was a girl's name, Luna. She'd enrolled him in school under the name Luna, was demanding that the court order nobody try to tell him he's a boy. And regardless of what you think of the transgender controversy and the transgender concept and all that, this is a 7-year-old child. And this was in Texas. And to, I think, the shock of so many people, the jury ruled in favor of the mom. Yesterday, the judge in the case, Judge Cooks, basically came in and said, "All right, that's it. Jury, you were wrong. I am overturning this ruling, and I am giving these parents joint custody, and I am giving them a joint medical decision," meaning the mom cannot do anything without the dad agreeing with it. That, I think, provides a big sigh of relief to a lot of people, not just the dad, who was scared to death that he was going to be ordered to call his son by another name and be ordered by the court to affirm this just massive, massive thing that's being thrust upon the kid. Because when he's at his mom's house, she dresses him up in dresses and puts makeup on him and all that kind of stuff. And the dad says, "Well, when he's at my house, he wants to play football. How about this? He's 7 years old. Kids explore stuff. They'll figure something out later, but don't force it on him." And so the judge has also ordered the dad to basically stop talking to the media and stop writing about it. So there's a gag order. So we're probably not going to hear much else from Jeffrey Younger. And to me, that's a good ruling in the right direction. I'm glad that the judge stepped in and said, "I am overruling this absolute nonsense ruling." I don't know what the wording was, but the judge says, "No, I'm not doing this. I'm not taking away custody of dad, and I'm not going to give mom the legal authority to start putting in hormone blockers and all of that into a 7-year-old child against the father's will." So that's a definitely step in the right direction. But the interesting thing as well, the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, obviously he hears about the firestorm here. Congressman Dan Crenshaw, Senator Ted Cruz, all these people are tweeting about it. And so the governor contacts the state's attorney general, says, "I would really like it if you were to investigate this case and investigate this child's living conditions and investigate this mom, just investigate the whole thing." So the attorney general said, "I'm on it." Contacts their version of DFS, Department of Family Services. And so now the child's situation and the mother are now going to be, at least to some level, investigated. And I think that's probably a really good thing, although I'm one of those who's hesitant and skeptical of whenever there's a controversy, contact the government. But you had two such extreme, not two, but one, the mother's extreme, extreme position on this, saying, "I'm going to prepare this child for a transition with these hormones and with these medical chemicals," and saying, "This is what I want to do with this child. This child likes Frozen, likes to wear a dress. So therefore, let's go ahead and block puberty from happening." That's mutilation. I mean, that's abuse. Listen, this kid grows up to be an adult and decides that's how he wants to live his life. Then at least he's made that choice and he's made an informed choice. I don't have to like it or understand it. And I don't either one, But a seven-year-old child, can't all of us, even those who are adamantly pro-LGBT on everything, can't we all agree that to do that to a seven-year-old child is a terrible, terrible, I would argue, abusive idea? So that's the update in the case, because at the time we were talking about it a couple days ago, the jury had just ruled against the mom, or against the dad rather, and handed everything over to the mom. Custody, medical decision, a green light to do the hormones and the transitions whenever she wanted to do it. So thank goodness a little common sense came in, because I was shocked that that ruling happened in the first place in the state of Texas. All right. So what's on your mind? The news, is it something about President Trump? Is it something about international stuff? Is it sports? You know, we just had the Cardinals. Actually, there are six Cardinals who are nominated for the Gold Glove Award. That is more than any other team in Major League Baseball. And I think there's actually a couple of them who could win. So go to KMOX.com if you want to see the list of the St. Louis Cardinals who have been nominated for the Gold Glove. Yachty is among them, and I think he's got a great chance to win it. Colton Wong should win Gold Glove, in my opinion. I think so. All right, let's talk about this interesting survey that I found a little bit earlier. There's an organization called Campaign for Free Speech, and they decided to commission a survey about Americans' opinion and views of freedom of speech and the First Amendment in this country. What they found was not just interesting, but to me, it's a little bit scary. So they hired an actual survey, an actual polling organization to do this. So they weren't just putting a survey monkey out there on their email. They were actually hiring professionals to do this. And just over half of the country, at least according to the survey, say that we have too much freedom of speech. That the First Amendment allows too much, that it hasn't kept up with our culture, and that we need to be able to rewrite parts of the First Amendment, or the First Amendment in general, in order to make hate speech illegal. Well, what's hate speech? Well, I guess it's whatever you hate. And so this survey, which was done pretty recently, says 51% think the First Amendment is outdated and should be rewritten. So here's my question. Is it? Should the First Amendment be rewritten? Has it not kept up? Did the founding fathers not realize that people could say hateful things or divisive things or insulting things? Well, I think they knew that people would and could say that personally. And the whole point of protecting all speech is that you have to protect the worst of it. Almost half of the people who were surveyed said hate speech, and I'm using air quotes when I say that, should be illegal, and somebody who engages in it should risk actual jail time if what they say is bad enough. To me, that's pretty scary if these numbers are even anywhere close to being accurate. First of all, because freedom of speech is among the foundational concepts of our country and our culture. Secondly, bad speech, even offensive speech, that gets challenged is how we, frankly, get better at knowing what's right. The answer to bad speech isn't police. The answer to bad speech is better ideas. And I mentioned before, we were talking about this, I don't know, an hour and a half or 2 hours ago, that the last thing I want to do is put any government or party or politician or bureaucrat in charge of deciding who's allowed to say what. Because I bet you, no. I guarantee you that what will happen is what's considered speech that's just fine under a Democrat will be considered offensive under a Republican and vice versa. And so the last thing you want is the government being able to say, you're allowed to say that, but you're not allowed to say that, or we're going to put you in jail. World history says that's a terrible outcome for people. But I understand not everybody agrees with me. Clearly, half of people don't agree with me on that. So if you say no, Mike, you're missing the point. There are things that we shouldn't be allowed to say. I'm all ears. Give me a call. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. And you know what? Love to hear what you have to say. Of course, if you want to continue our conversation on ghost stories or whatever else is on your mind, give me a call. Even if it's the ghost of the First Amendment, if you know what I mean. I'm Mike Ferguson, in for Ryan Recker. This is Overnight America.
Happy Halloween from Overnight America.
It is 1:36 on your Friday morning. I'm Mike Ferguson in for Ryan. Ryan comes back next week after some vacation. The situation in Venezuela. Yeah, this is really, really chaotic. And, you know, people are arguing over, well, does this prove anything about socialism? Does it prove anything about, you know, whatever your ideology is? I think it does say a lot about socialism. But joining me right now is Stephen Moore. He's the economist. You've read him in The Wall Street Journal and you see him on Fox News. He writes for Fox Business Channel. He was actually one of President Trump's original economic advisors. And he's taken a particular look at what's happening in Venezuela. And first of all, Stephen, thank you so much for the time this evening.
Oh, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
And right now we're looking at the situation in Venezuela. And I mentioned earlier in the program that we see that kind of chaos and go, yep, there's proof. Socialism doesn't work. But beyond that, we all have a personal interest in what's happening there. I'm looking at your recent op-ed that I found on Fox Business. And you're talking about President Trump making sure that American oil companies can be in Venezuela. Why on earth should all of us care about that?
Well, first of all, let's start from the beginning, which is what you just said, that, you know, if there's any lesson from what's happened in the tragedy of Venezuela, and a tragedy or crisis or you know, just total despair in that country where literally people are starving to death in a country that was once one of the richest countries in South America. It didn't take too long, and in about 20 years or so under socialist rule, the Venezuelan economy just crashed, and there aren't jobs, there's no food, the stores are empty. So people who think that socialism would be a good thing for the United States, you know, everything's free in Venezuela, it's just that there isn't anything to buy, right? And so, I mean, it really is a tragic situation. I think there's a lesson there, don't you, for Americans who think, oh, it'd be wonderful if we had Elizabeth Warren and she gave us everything for free and we socialized all our institutions. That doesn't work out too well, as a matter of course. Now, the situation right now, by the way, there were many, many high-profile leftists in Hollywood and politics in the United States who treated Hugo Chavez as if he was some kind of liberator. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Hugo Chavez was the one who destroyed the economy of Venezuela, just like Castro destroyed the economy of Cuba. Now we're in a situation where the president is Maduro. He is a bad guy. He was handpicked by Hugo Chavez. He's continuing with the destructive policies and the human rights violations that happened under Chavez. And the economy is in complete turmoil. And there will be a regime change, hopefully sooner rather than later. And what's important is that when that regime change happens, that we don't lose Venezuela again, that we have a pro-America, you know, pro-freedom, pro-liberty government in Venezuela that rebuilds their economy. And to do that, we need American companies to continue to be able to function there. So that's the issue at stake, and it's an important one for not just the United States, but for the people of Venezuela.
And we're talking right now about the oil companies. I think a lot of people know, obviously, we know Saudi Arabia has all kinds of oil. We know about the oil in the Middle East, but there's a ton, well, many, many tons of oil in Venezuela right now. So it's just mind-boggling that nobody has any, well, that so many people have nothing to eat and the economy's in shambles because they are rich in natural resources.
You know, it really shows how you can destroy a country with the wrong economic system. I mean, we know that the free enterprise system is what creates wealth. It's what made America the richest country in the history of, you know, civilization and the freest country. And so, you know, all these countries continue to get it wrong. And you know, as I said earlier, Venezuela made a sharp turn to the left. They were applauded by the American intelligentsia for being so, quote, progressive. And now you've got a country that's really in ruin. And they're actually eating the animals in the zoo now. That's how desperate they are for food. It's really, it's a great tragedy. And so we need to make sure that they rebound and that once Maduro is out, and by the way, all we need to, I think that Trump basically said, look, we'll deliver a 747 in Caracas, he can get on the plane, he leaves, and then you get a functioning government again. And we want that to be a free enterprise system. We want that to be, you know, obviously pro-American. They're in the American hemisphere, so we want allies in that area. And so the point, what does this have to do with companies like our American energy companies like Exxon? We want them to be able to produce the oil once this bad the bad government is gone. And that's the issue, is whether or not we're going to force Exxon and American companies out of Venezuela completely, or whether we're going to have them there for when it's time to resurrect the economy. And hopefully that will be sooner rather than later.
Stephen, I can imagine somebody saying, well, hold on, if we work to keep our oil companies in Venezuela and working and pulling the oil and exporting it and bringing it here, aren't we in some ways helping to fund the Maduro regime by, you know, paying those taxes and those fees?
Well, that's a great question. And the answer, I mean, it's a fine line. So we want to make sure that that when the Maduro government topples, which is going to be sometime soon, because, by the way, they've had elections and they've already, elected a new government to come in. We want to make sure that they are ready to go. That, by the way, it really shows how destructive a socialist system is, that a country, as you just said, is one of the richest in oil resources in the world, can't even feed its own people because they're so incompetent. And so we want to make sure, both for the good of the Venezuelan people, but also for, the United States of America and our foreign policy, that we can help them as soon as the Chavez government is finally ousted, that we have a functioning government that's ready to go, that's ready to hit the ground, that they can start producing the oil, and they're going to need companies like Venezuela, Exxon there to do it.
So outside of the ideological battle between socialism and a free market, or the tribal battles between our partisan outlook on things of foreign policy, is this something that could actually affect Americans' budget, maybe by raising or lowering the price for gasoline or for other products?
Well, let's not forget, I mean, the number one producer of oil and gas in the world today is the United States of America, thanks to Donald Trump. And that's been a huge, huge shift that's happened thanks to the shale oil and gas revolution. And I always laugh when I hear, I don't know if I should laugh or cry, when I hear people like Bernie Sanders and people like Elizabeth Warren, say, hey, if I'm president, I'm going to shut down the shale oil and gas. I mean, that'd be like people in Nebraska, hey, you're not going to grow corn anymore. So we've really changed the geopolitical situation when it comes down energy because of our massive shale oil and gas production that's happening all over the country, everywhere from Pennsylvania to West Virginia to Texas to Oklahoma to North Dakota. It's an amazing and wonderful thing to see. We'd love to see Venezuela producing oil as well. And if they get their pumps going, that could mean lower gasoline prices in the United States because you have a greater supply.
We're visiting with Stephen Moore. You have been a senior economic advisor to the president, and of course, your economic consultant with FreedomWorks at the time. Your most recent book, Trumponomics: Inside America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. Last minute or so we've got, Stephen. I mean, we do have, as you've mentioned a couple of times, the Democratic presidential candidates all wanting to talk economics. Their approach is wildly different than what the president's is. If you had to surmise and give an elevator pitch for Trumponomics, what are you going to argue? I love some of his policies. There's some that make me cringe when it comes to tariffs and things like that. But what's your take on it?
Well, I mean, we've got one of the best economies in 50 years. Look, we've got the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years, the lowest black unemployment rate, the lowest Hispanic unemployment rate, the lowest Asian unemployment rate, the lowest female unemployment rate, the lowest unemployment rate for people without a high school and college degree. We have the lowest inflation rate in 50 years. We have the lowest interest rates in 50 years. We have the highest wage gains in 25 years. I mean, this is a beautiful, beautiful picture. I mean, you can't imagine a better picture for the U.S. economy than we have right now. And look, I'd like to see our manufacturing do a little better. It's fallen a bit, although the most recent signs show a bit of a comeback. But the point is, you know, this is a booming economy, and the only thing that can really disrupt it right now would be, you know, a President Warren or a President Bernie Sanders or something of that nature, which would reverse our, you know, policies that have worked so well. The tax cuts have been a phenomenal, phenomenal success. We're seeing all sorts of investment capital from around the world now coming to the United States. Incidentally, we're the only country that's actually growing right now. Europe isn't growing. Japan isn't growing. Canada's basically, they're growing a little bit, but not as fast as we are. China looks like it's headed to its first recession in 30 years. Now, what's the dark cloud on the horizon? I think you're right. It's those tariffs in China. We've got to get this trade deal done. I met with the president about 10 days ago in the Oval Office. We spoke for about an hour about this. I think we're getting close to getting a deal. And by the way, if you think the economy's strong now, wait till we get a deal with China on trade. You're going to see the biggest boom ever. And look, Americans don't vote against prosperity. If that happens, Trump wins a 40-state re-election landslide.
All right, Stephen, people want to keep track of your writing, your research, your comments, your books, everything. What's the way you want them to do it?
Well, go to heritage.org, where a lot of my stuff is. And, you know, I'm obviously a regular on Fox News. And, you know, I'm so pleased to do your show. Anytime you want me on, I'm happy to do it. And, you know, I have to tell you, I'm a Washington Nationals fan, so I'm pretty ecstatic about what's happening in the World Series.
We're still mad at you in St. Louis over all of that, but you know, they're surprising us so far in the series. I mean, I thought Astros in six, but now I got to rethink my prediction.
Yeah, well, it shows what happens when a team gets hot. But anyway, it's appreciate you having me on, and I hope to talk to you soon.
I hope so too, Stephen. Thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you.
All right, from the world of politics to something that's just a little less offensive, let's talk about a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania, because that's probably not quite as bad as what we see in politics anymore these days. Now I'll tell you where you can be a part of the largest screening of the Rocky Horror Picture Show in the state. It is happening around here, my friends, and I'll tell you all about it just ahead right here on Overnight America on KMOX. One of the strangest movies ever made is now turned into one of the strangest experiences you can have in person. And I'm talking about the Rocky Horror Picture Show. By the way, my name is Mike Ferguson. I am in for Ryan. He'll be back next week. He's just on vacation. So if you are into the whole Rocky Horror Picture Show performance, you know, if you're not familiar with it, what's happening is there's a bunch of actors who are doing exactly what's happening in the movie. And the movie is not for little kids, but, you know, it's medium age kids. If they're a little mature, they can deal with some of the content. But this is the one where Tim Curry played the character Frank Infurter. There we go. There he is. Yep.
I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania.
Hitting the baritone note right there. So at Six Flags coming up on November 1st, so just coming up here in another week or so, St. Louis Six Flags is going to host the largest screening of the Rocky Horror Picture Show in Missouri's history. So they're going to have the live actors and everything. So if you get your ticket to go to Six Flags, and at the end of the night, they're going to do this. Where are they going to do this? At the
Palace Theater.
Which theater is that? Palace Theater. Okay, so right around 11 o'clock, they're going to start getting in line for the Palace Theater. So it's free if you've already bought your admission to Six Flags. But they're limited to 1,000 people just for the seating. It doesn't say anything here about if you're going to be in the costumes or everything, because some of those costumes aren't going to pass muster with the Six Flags people. Make sure that you have your ID if you even look like you could potentially be thought of as a teenager or college age person, because you got to be at least 17 to get in by yourself. If you're below that, you got to have an adult with you, because the movie is actually R-rated, believe it or not. I don't think it would have been R-rated today, but back in 1970, whatever, it ended up with an R rating. So if you want to learn more about that, go on to Facebook. And the theater group that's working with him here is called Flustered Mustard. All kinds of interesting stuff there. So, and yes, you can buy a bag of stuff to throw at the actors on the stage. And by the way, the funds that are being raised with this particular thing, it's going to go help pay for the repairs being made to the St. Andrews Cinema that had that big fire not too long ago. All right. Our American Stories is up just ahead right here. Hey, thanks for all the phone calls and those text messages and for listening. I'm Mike Ferguson. Been filling in for Ryan a couple days this week. Be sure to catch Missouri Viewpoints this Sunday morning on Channel 24 at 7 a.m. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.